Welcome back to the Daily Drum on WHUR and Sirius XM, Channel 141. This is the Insight segment. I'm Harold Fisher.
It's just too soon. I think it's too soon. And I love the people. I love those people that use all of those things, the spas and the beauty parlors and barbershops, tattoo parlors. I love them. But they can wait a little bit longer, just a little bit, not much, because safety has to predominate. We have to have that. So I told the governor very simply that I disagree with his decision, but he has to do what he thinks is right.
That was President Trump just minutes ago at his daily coronavirus press conference, appearing to do an about-face about some parts of the country opening for business this week. New epidemiological models released this afternoon say Georgia and 11 other states should wait until June 8th to open their states at the very earliest. This flies in the face of what the president and some southern governors have been talking about since last week. Well, tonight, we take a look at the science and the politics of the pandemic in America. Are they at odds? My guests are infectious disease specialist Dr. Lisa Fitzpatrick and Dr. William Spriggs, professor and former department chair with the Department of Economics here at Howard University. I want to ask you tonight, who are you listening to? Are you listening to the doctors? Are you listening to the politicians? Want to hear from you. Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Tweet us using the hashtag WHURFM. Dr. Fitzpatrick and Dr. Spriggs, thank you both for joining me. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Harold. It's great to be here with you again.
Thank you so much. Dr. Spriggs,
thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Let me first talk about some late breaking news. This happening about an hour or so ago. Dr. Rick Bright, a top scientist with the Department of Health and Human Services, says he was dismissed after pressing for vetting of hydroxychloroquine. That is the drug promoted by the president for weeks. Reports coming out this week essentially saying that it does not work, and indeed there were some fatalities associated with its use. I'll start with you, Dr. Spriggs. Do you believe that the doctors are falling victim to the politics here?
This president has been the bully in chief since before he took office. He's continued that same pattern. And unfortunately, it's what we see happening at the workplace as well. When workers have tried to take their safety in their own hands, the retaliation from employers against those workers is being transmitted by the president's attitude towards safety, towards human life. And so it's a dangerous situation.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Fitzpatrick, as a physician, you deal with the data. You deal with the information at hand. Certainly, this is right in your wheelhouse, infectious diseases. What are the kind of uphill battles that you see doctors are dealing with as they are having to tell some unvarnished, difficult truths to our political leaders?
I'm really glad you're having this conversation, Harold, because people are struggling to figure out who to believe and what to believe. But what's important is that we need the science to guide what happens next. I think it's incredible that political leaders are instructing the public what to do in the health and science field. It's really inappropriate. So I think the biggest challenge we have is helping people understand that there's so many things we don't understand about this virus, and the best we can do is look at how it's behaved up to now and make our best guess about what to do next. But one of the other important strategies is to test people. We need to find people who have this infection and isolate them. This is public health and outbreak response 101, and we're not doing a good job at that. So I think we need to be focusing on using science to guide the decisions and finding ways to test people so that we can identify cases of coronavirus.
But Dr. Spriggs, all politicians are not created equal, and all of them are not acting in the same way, even within specific parties. And the economic politics of this are playing a big role in this tug of war that has been playing out not only over the past week, but literally over the past few hours. Can you talk to me a little bit about that?
Well, it's interesting you raise that. There actually has been a new study released this week pointing to this being similar to what we've seen with belief in global warming. Republicans are far less likely to believe the science. And if you live in a Republican-leaning county, you are far less likely to be staying in place, even when there are orders for you to stay in place, than is true if you live in a Democratic-leaning county. So it's unfortunate that just like with global warming, the Republican Party has turned science into a partisan thing. And it's dangerous in this situation because in the case of African Americans, I know everybody wants to talk about issues of comorbidity, but the comorbidity rates aren't as drastically different as the death rates. And the comorbidity can't explain why the racial disparity in death is higher in some states than in others. But
doctor, let me stop you right there. Let me stop you right there real quick. Help me with comorbidity versus death rates for those who don't have PhDs, including me.
Comorbidity, a lot of people are pointing to the fact that we know people are more likely to die from this virus if they have high blood pressure, diabetes, and are overweight, have asthma. These ailments seem to make it harder for the body to fight the disease, and they're more likely to succumb to the disease. But the differences in the black-white rates in hypertension, kidney disease, diabetes is not as great as the gap in black deaths. And if you look at the states that have higher disparities between blacks and whites versus those that have much lower disparities, there are some states where there aren't racial disparities. So it's unlikely that those underlying medical conditions could drive the explanation. But what is clear is that black workers are far more likely to be in touch with the public. We are disproportionately healthcare workers. We are disproportionately workers who do not get to telework, and so we're out and about more than white workers. And so this exposure makes our reaction to being irresponsible and reopening businesses without providing workers with a voice, making sure that workers are going to be protected on the job, making sure that their bosses can't retaliate against them. The president wants to give companies limited liability if their workers die from COVID. So these are the things that we have to be clearly aware of in the first instance before we can go off on the deep end and ignore science.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We're talking about the science and the politics of the pandemic in America. Who are you listening to? Why are you listening to them? Are you listening to the doctors? Are you listening to the politicians? Let's go to the phone lines. Charles calling from South Carolina, a state that is supposed to be opening up this week. Charles, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hello, Harold, and to your guest.
How are you?
I'm from the DMV. Great.
Okay.
I actually escaped the DMV back on March 24th because, you know, we watch Hollywood and all these great movies that show destruction and death. Well, I imagine that's the worst, and I don't even want to be in the possibility of it happening, so I came down here. But I am listening to the scientists and the doctors. I have a science mind. Your guests have towers of education far beyond me, but I've been in the health sciences and across the board for 30 years, 35 years. And, you know, people down here, you know, a lot of pre-existing conditions. I'm in a rural area. We have 135 acres. We have two. We're away from everyone. But when I go out once a month just to get supplies, there are people just not believing that it's happening. And I'm looking at these people, and they look old. They look broke down. They smoke cigarettes. I'm just, you know, you guys just giving up or you don't believe it. But here in South Carolina, if they open it up, I mean, it's going to be rough. And I just urge a lot of people, if you're in business, sports team, have an influencer, me politically, I think you should boycott every state that doesn't follow what the scientists and the doctors say, because that will definitely put an economic crunch on them, and it won't be corona either. So I think that needs to be done. We have to consider our safety. If somebody opens up a state, I don't want to do any business in that state at all.
Okay. And Charles, thank you so much for giving us a call. I appreciate your perspective. Dr. Fitzpatrick, your thoughts about what Charles was saying, because as we expect, you know, Myrtle Beach and some of the other coastal communities are going to be opening up soon in South Carolina, in Georgia, and the like. Your thoughts about what you may see based on what we've already seen in Florida this past weekend, for example?
Well, again, if testing isn't adequate, it's impossible for us to know how many cases of coronavirus infection are in the community. So if we don't know that information, we're flying blind. So there's a great possibility that without knowing how many folks actually have the infection, we'll see a lot of new infections. And this has always been the concern. People ask me, well, it looks like the number of deaths and the number of cases is just like the flu. The reason it's different than the flu is because the flu season starts in late fall and it ends around this time. So that's about 9 or 10 months for the flu. We've had almost the same number of cases of coronavirus infection in the last several weeks as we've had in the entire flu season last year and the year before. So that's the challenge. When you have such an influx of patients in such a short amount of time, our health system can't sustain that. And that's why we're seeing so many challenges with the frontline healthcare workers and not having enough equipment and personal protective equipment. So the people who live in states that are opening up, I wish they would be mindful about the potential impact this will have on the healthcare system. And someone else asked me, "Well, why do we have to close? Why can't people just practice social distancing, wear masks, wash their hands, and so on? All the public health messages we've been publicizing and talking about." It's because we can't rely on every individual to do the right thing. And that's the reason it's so important for states to close and for us to continue with these public health recommendations until we see the number of cases consistently decreasing. And we're just not seeing that yet in a lot of places. So that's the concern.
And to your point, at last look, we have more than 45,000 deaths related to COVID-19 since the first case, the earliest case now reported as early February. So February from March, April. So within 2 months, there have been more than 45,000 deaths from COVID-19. The CDC estimates that from October of last year through April 4th of this year, there have been 62,000 flu-related deaths, a maximum of 62,000, a minimum of 24,000. But we are certainly talking about 6 months, you know, so we're talking about you know, midway when it comes to COVID-19. So certainly something to consider. 202.
We're not that far away from 62,000. No.
We really aren't. We really aren't. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We are talking about the science versus the politics of the COVID-19 pandemic. Who are you listening to and why? Lines are still open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Let me sneak in one more phone call before the break. Mansa, calling from Capitol Heights. Quickly, what's on your mind? I've got 30 seconds.
Good evening.
Hi, go ahead.
Yeah, well, looking at my choices between the mainstream media, the politicians, and the president, even the scientists, mainstream media, they are practicing, in my opinion, they practice propaganda more than properly informing people, telling them the truth based on facts backed by evidence.
Why do you say that, Mansa?
They're telling you what their bosses tell them to tell you. The politicians, everybody know they lie, so that's you don't pay no attention. They're parasites and they lie anyway, so we already know that. Now the president is, I don't know anybody that's better informed than the president of the United States. Everybody's saying that he sounds crazy, but who's better informed than, look how much information he has access to. All the states that are led by our Republican states, their infection and death rate is lower than the states led by a Democratic leadership.
So, well, Mansa, hold your point, because I want you to finish your point, and I'm sure there are some things that we can share with you about that. So please do not hang up, because we want to talk to you after the break. Please stay with us. The Daily Drum will continue on SiriusXM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Angela Stribling is next with the original Quiet Storm on WHUR. This conversation continues on SiriusXM Channel 141 in just a few seconds. Lines are still open. Please keep trying to get through. We want to get to your phone calls at 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We'll be back in just a moment. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on SiriusXM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. This is the Insight segment. Tonight, we continue our conversation about the science and the politics of the pandemic in America. Are they at odds? My guests are infectious disease specialist Dr. Lisa Fitzpatrick and Dr. William Spriggs, professor and former department chair with the Department of Economics at Howard University. We're asking tonight, who are you listening to, the doctors or the politicians? Lines are still open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We had Mansa on the line. Mansa, are you still there?
Yes, I'm still here.
Good. So let me just throw out a couple of things to you, and then I'll have Dr. Spriggs and also Dr. Fitzpatrick kind of address it. So let's talk about some of the things that have happened locally. For example, we saw earlier this week in the same party, the Republican Party, state of Maryland, has one of the highest infection rates in the state. As well as a significant number of deaths. Last week, the president told the governors to find their own testing kits. The governor went out and did that, and then the president got upset because he did that, and he told the governor that there were federal testing sites in the state of Maryland. Those are not federal testing sites, man. So those are federal sites that can process but cannot test. The president, as you know, was talking about opening up markets earlier within the last hour. He said it's too soon. Last week, he said it wasn't too soon, but the doctors were telling him that. So I guess I'm trying to understand your point. Dr. Spriggs, help me with this before we bring Mansa back.
I just want to make a quick point.
Sure, go right ahead.
Listen. One of the things that's happening, people are being pressured to come up with coronavirus cases, infections, and deaths. You know, when the deaths, when people die from the flu and people die from pneumonia, people die from catching diseases or being infected in the hospital, these deaths have drastically decreased or disappeared completely, or because they've being converted to coronavirus deaths unjustly. So, because people are being pressured, and so are the doctors and scientists are being pressured because they just passed a bill for $2 trillion. That money got to go somewhere. And everybody trying to put themselves in a position to get some of that money. So they pressuring people. New York got caught artificially inflating their covert coronavirus infections and deaths. So you have to look at this thing from a realistic perspective. Some people are being improperly influenced by the money they're trying to obtain.
Dr. Spriggs first and then Dr. Fitzpatrick.
I can only say, wow. New York had undercounted the deaths because we don't have proper testing, and they had miscounted on their deaths. When they went back to actually review the record, they understood that they had been undercounting. I'm sorry the caller wants to believe that all these deaths somehow or another are fake news. To the countless Black families out there who have suffered through loss, I apologize that we would have someone on the radio to add to your pain. This is real. It is real in the Black community. We are dying. This pandemic, by comparison, and just here in April, we've lost over three times as many people as we lost the entire year to the H1N1, the last pandemic that involved a flu-like virus that spread around the globe. This is a very serious illness. It has shut down many plants. We had the largest pork-producing plant in the country, run by Tyson's in Iowa, where the company had to shut it down because so many of the workers were getting ill. That wasn't about Tyson's trying to get money from someone. That was Tyson's coming to the realization that this is a real disease and infects real people and it has real effects. And it's unfortunate that there is so much disinformation led by the president that we have people getting misinformed to this extent.
Yeah. Dr. Fitzpatrick, your thoughts about what Mansa was sharing with us?
It's hard for us to know how many people in the country have this infection because, as we've talked about, we haven't had adequate testing. So in order to know what the true death rates are, you have to know how many people have the infection. So I don't think it's a matter of Republican states versus Democratic states and what those numbers are based on your politics. I think it's an artifact. It's related to not knowing the true numbers, because we talked about February being the time that we started looking at this. But if you look at the timeline for when this all started, it was probably in late November, early December, the virus left China and came to the United States on airplanes. And because we weren't ready and because we didn't have enough tests, we can't possibly know where all the infections are, and that would be the only way for us to know what the true death rates are. So I just want to remind people when they're looking at these numbers that they are estimates, and they are more than likely underestimates of what's going on, not just in the states where you're hearing a lot of information like New York, but across the country. There are cases that we don't know about. We've asked people to stay home if they don't feel short of breath or they don't feel they have a severe case. So those are people we would never count because they never showed up on our radar. So just a caution when sharing information like the caller is sharing in saying that only red states versus blue states have a certain death rate. It's not true.
Mansa, I would only, you know, suggest
let me
to
just
you,
say this. I wasn't
real
I
quick.
Wasn't,
go ahead. Go ahead.
I was just using the state thing as an example.
Sure.
How things being carried out. Listen, I'm not. I don't eat pork, so I don't know anything about that. And I'm definitely. I don't even. I'm not. I'm not so-called black person. I'm a indigenous American. So I just feel like I always try to make it my business to be properly informed, and so I can make proper decisions for my family. So I go out my way to inform myself the best way I can. I get news from a lot of different places. And,
okay.
And one thing, listen, the only reason why I lost all confidence in the mainstream media is because the information they gave us on 9/11. Everything they said about 9/11 was a lie.
Let me stop you there, because I don't want to go down that rabbit hole. This is not 9/11. This is not the Iraq War. The world has never seen anything like this. And I think it would not be advisable for you to make that kind of comparison between what happened at 9/11 and what is happening right now. The only other thing that I would recommend is that continue to use your best filter. If you're going to listen to CNN, you can push the opinion makers aside. But again, listen to the facts, because the numbers are not going to lie. The president's going to change his mind. Politicians are going to change their mind, whichever way the wind blows, whether you like the president or not. But the facts are not going to lie. And the funeral homes and the deaths that we are seeing in the hospitals, that stuff is not going to lie. And, you know, as a person with a family and people that I love, I would definitely err on the side of caution. But Mansa, thank you so much for joining this conversation. I appreciate it. And we definitely want you and your family to stay safe. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Zero. One of the things, Dr. Fitzpatrick, that I did want to go back to that we started to discuss before the break is when we are seeing, conversations about opening up, beaches, as well as barbershops, tattoo parlors, massage therapy venues. Tell me if I'm off base here, but the thing that comes to mind to me is a billiard table where the cue ball is an infected person, and when you break the billiard balls and that cue ball is hitting another person, infecting that person, and then bouncing around and bouncing around, and some balls never are 6 feet apart, and some of them are 6 inches apart, and eventually at least half that table is infected. Am I off base here? Is that a good analogy there?
I love it. It's a great analogy. And I think the problem with opening up too soon, again, and I know I sound like a broken record, the problem with opening up too soon is that you don't have the ability to find people who have the infection so that they can practice prevention and keep other people from becoming infected. So, you know, I know it's a challenging, it's a conundrum because we see the impact, the economic impact this is taking on people. But because there are so many unknowns about this virus, I think you said it before, it is much better to be safe than sorry. And for those states that haven't locked down, obviously the federal government doesn't have the authority to make them lock down. But if they're not locking down, then at the very least they need to aggressively find ways to test their people, particularly those who are at high risk, people in nursing homes, incarcerated, anyone who's in a crowded setting, living in a crowded setting, or anyone who has chronic health conditions. They need to test those folks to make sure they don't have infections. So as long as they're doing something, asking people to practice social distancing, even wearing masks, I know it's controversial, but anything we can do to mitigate spread, they should be doing all of those things if they refuse to lock down.
202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Eileen calling from Virginia. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hello, thank you very much.
Sure.
This topic is very close to my heart because I am a practicing nurse practitioner in the state of Virginia. It's intriguing to me how we think about the question of who are we listening to. You know, in every field, there is an expert or a leading presence in that field that we yield to in order to give us, you know, the structure, the format, the viewpoint or the frame of mind in which to work with. And of course, in politics, we look to the politicians who are generally the voice to the people. But I think this does require a team effort. The politicians need to recognize, obviously, that the healthcare scientists are the ones that are going to be the leaders in this, as viruses, obviously, and how they even, you know, mutate and how they are transmitted, much less how they are, you know, limited or prevented from spreading to the wide population. It's going to be in our hands. At the same time, we need the politicians. We need the economists. We need everybody pretty much to put their heads together, but we need to recognize that the answers are still pending, are still evolving as this virus is very much evolving. Nobody truly knows, again, whether this virus in its current state, the vaccines that are currently pending, are going to be the same to be able to be effectively preventing the future cases. As we talk about potential second round infections that are coming out, as we see in China. So yeah. I still think that everybody needs to be very open to the science. Everybody needs to recognize that we are in uncertain times, scientifically as well as politically and economically. And we need to realize that a lack and a shortage of resources is going to be our biggest problem as we realize that we need to stay away. We need to distance. We need to try to prevent, because prevention is better than cure at this point, since we do not have a cure.
Yeah. Let me see what Dr. Spriggs has to say about that, because one of the things that Eileen mentioned that I thought was interesting, and Eileen, thank you so much for sharing with us. Dr. Spriggs, there was a lot of discussion last week about a divided country where you had the, you know, the Eileens, for example, who were talking about prevention, kind of paraphrasing you, we are talking about dealing with the health piece. But then the other side, you have people who are concerned about jobs and economics and the like. You know, from your position, do you believe that the country is divided between these two groups, or do you think that the reopeners are just making much more noise?
The reopeners are getting the attention of the media far better than they deserve. The issue here is there should not have been economic pain. There should have been better planning. So back in January and February, when we saw what was happening in other countries, and we understood a point would come when we would have to stop public gatherings to stop the spread of the disease, we should have increased testing so we could have an understanding of how many people had the disease. But you had to think, if we do have to shut down, how do you handle that in our economy? One of our larger industries is the restaurant industry. It employs 12.6 million people. If you know that you're going to shut down an industry that employs 12.6 million people, then that means before you do it, you have a plan. How am I going to help out this industry? How am I going to help out these workers? You don't wake up in May and April and say, oh, I did this. Now what do I do? So first off, all of the economic pain is from this lack of planning. There should be no economic pain here. Mm-hmm. Second, if you did nothing, there is going to be a reaction by people anyway, because people don't want to get infected. So the thought that if you just open up a store, someone is going to go rushing in, it's just not true. People are going to respond to that uncertainty. And it's uncertainty that causes recessions, because when people become uncertain, they stop consuming. And one of the problems with reopening too soon from the economic side, we understand it would be a catastrophe from the health side, and we would bottle up our economy because of the extreme pressure we would be putting on the healthcare sector. But on the economic side, right now, because we didn't plan properly, if, as an example, if you open up a mall, that doesn't mean shoppers are going to come. But if you open up the mall, then most malls have a provision that all stores that are in the mall have to open. If I'm one of the smaller stores and I open up, I may not get enough sales to justify having two or three salespeople there a day. So you're going to force me to take a loss. And it's going to be a war of attrition. Those companies that have liquidity and lots of money, they don't mind. They'll wait this out. I, on the other hand, I'm going to open up, not get enough business, and I'm going to quickly go out of business because I can't cover that cost of having the people in the store. So this idea that somehow or another reopening would get jobs back, would get people back shopping, it's just not true. And it's not true that people are going to rush to a movie theater or that they're going to be willing to sit shoulder to shoulder with people in a 17,000-seat arena. That's not going to happen. And so the problem we're having is by not planning in advance, we're having a very uneven economy. It's disadvantaging a lot of businesses because we didn't plan. What we should have done was plan in advance, hold the companies so they could hibernate, and then we could reopen with a level playing field. We're not going to reopen with a level playing field. If we look at what Europe did, everybody noticed that they did shut down, but they shut down because their workers were being paid anyway. I have a relative who works for a McDonald's in Paris. Right now she's getting 80% of her pay because they understood you can't just shut down the industry. You have to plan the whole thing. You can't just plan part of it. You got to plan the whole thing.
That's amazing.
The unfortunate reality is that even in shutting.
I'm sorry. Who was that? Did we lose someone? I think we may have lost Eileen, but Dr. Fitzpatrick, go right ahead.
Yeah, I was just saying, I think that's a really interesting point about being in this place now because we didn't plan and didn't think ahead. And I'll just tell you personally, I think this is partly because our leaders were in denial that this would actually rise to the level of urgency that it did in Italy and in China. And I remember a family member asking me about this in early February, and I dismissed it. I said, well, because I was listening to the CDC, and I said to her, I said, well, we've seen these coronavirus epidemics crop up before because we've had MERS and SARS, and then they petered out before things got out of control like we're seeing now. And because the CDC was downplaying it and the federal response teams were downplaying it, I was downplaying it until I realized, oh, no, something is really happening here. And I think because we set the tone in the beginning, being dismissive that this could be an issue, that's another reason there was no planning. So I think that is a great point he's making about why we're in this situation now.
Can we talk a little bit more about that if you have the ability to add to it? You mentioned MERS, SARS, H1N1, those kinds of things. Why were they not as impactful in the U.S. as the coronavirus has been? Does it have to do with the specific diseases, or does that have to do with something we were doing then that we didn't do now? What do you think, Dr. Fitzpatrick?
Yeah, that's the million-dollar question. I mean, they're all coronaviruses, and, you know, we have plenty of coronaviruses that cause the common cold. And generally, coronaviruses, even when they jump from animals to humans, they might wreak a lot of havoc in the beginning for a few weeks or a few months, and then it wanes. And we didn't see that happen with MERS and SARS. The other issue is this virus, for some reason, seems to be more easily transmissible, and it also seems to be more infectious. And then this notion that people who are asymptomatic can transmit this virus 1 or 2 days before they start showing symptoms is something that's new, or at least that wasn't studied with the other viruses. It didn't seem to be true with the other coronaviruses. So that's the million-dollar question, Harold. Why is this virus different? And I think that's where a lot of the conspiracy theories come from, because people are trying to figure out, well, what happened? This is not behaving like we expect coronaviruses to behave.
I want to ask Dr. Spriggs, an economics question. Obviously, I'm not an economist. And to, my simple mind, one of the things that has surprised me, and maybe you can give me a little economy 101 as to how, or economics 101 as to how money in big business and big companies are working, because it seems to me that this pandemic has put us in the position of the old tale, the emperor has no clothes. And I'm talking about the big business companies that are now, Walt Disney, for example, and some of the other companies short of Walmart and Amazon, obviously, that are doing big business. But, some of these other, businesses, I assumed naively that they had enough money to last them for several months, but now they've laid off, tens of thousands of people, and I just use Disney as an example, but there are others. We've got Neiman Marcus, for example, the luxury retailer, laying off. And what's going on here? Were they just making money and spending it, and making money and spending it like somebody who, who just, wanted a new pair of shoes every week and a new handbag? Sorry, ladies. What's going on here, Dr. Spriggs?
Well, Neiman Marcus is different because it was like many retailers, highly leveraged. There's a whole story to explain about why they were over-leveraged, having to do with hedge funds and how Wall Street has ruined our retail sector. But you should not interpret Disney laying off workers as a sign Disney doesn't have money. Mm-hmm. This is unique to American companies. The United States is unique within the industrialized world, that because of our low union density, because our laws are so weighted towards employment at will, that American companies, the moment there's any slowdown, they fire people. That has nothing to do with whether they have money. That has everything to do with their business model. And their business model is fire people first, ask questions later. So don't interpret people being let go as these companies weren't healthy. Now, mm-hmm. Some of them aren't healthy because they are bleeding money, as in the case of the airline industry, because no one's flying right now. Disney is a multifaceted corporation. It let off people at its amusement parks because no one's in the amusement parks. And so they weren't willing to absorb the loss of having people in an empty amusement park. And again, because of their philosophy, they have no interest in hoarding those workers. We have operated our nation with such high levels of unemployment for so long that American companies have just got used to the idea, we can let workers go, we'll just find some more, and we don't care. So they have not reacted to this downturn with trying to hoard their labor force. They actually should, because when workers get disconnected, it doesn't mean that they come back. And that's part of the planning that needed to have been put in place, so that it would have been easier for workers to retain the relationship with their employers. The companies that are doing the labor hoarding right now are the companies that are going to come out way ahead, because they'll be ready to get started right away. They won't have to deal with training. They won't have to deal with recruitment. And this is not a recession in the sense of suddenly demand collapsed. On March 15th, it wasn't that national demand collapsed. It was that we ordered large segments of
our economy to shut down. And it's the arrogance and the attitude towards these workers and these industries that no one was sort of thinking through. 12.6 million people, that is the size of the entire American manufacturing workforce. Mm-hmm. So if you're an economic planner, you wouldn't say, oh, we're just going to shut down the entire manufacturing workforce of the United States. Boom. And what do you think is going to happen? I got disturbed when people said, oh, my goodness, 12 million people are applying for unemployment insurance. You just ordered 12 million people out of work. What do you think is going to happen? I mean, come on. So it's the size of these industries that we shut down that are huge. The retail sector plus the restaurants, we're talking close to 30 million workers or industries that we've asked, please shut down. That's a huge share of the American workforce. It's close to 20-25% of the American workforce. So that's why I was saying somebody had to be in place and think, you can't shut down 25% of the American workforce unless you have a plan. You're going to get this. And so, no, it's not that these companies are strapped for cash. They were spending a lot of their money on stock buybacks. They were spending it on dividends. They spent their profits. Remember, they got a tax cut mm-hmm. of close to $1 trillion just 2 years ago that gave them close to $1 trillion.
Yeah.
They spent it on buybacks and dividends, and they retained cash. So they remember the 2008 downturn when they needed to hold cash. They knew that they needed more liquidity. They could get in a position where they wouldn't be able to borrow money. Yeah. So many of them are doing okay when it comes to cash, but their philosophy is fire workers first.
Dr. Spriggs, I'm going to have to let that be the last word as we are out of time, but I want to thank you as well as Dr. Fitzpatrick for sharing with us. And I want to encourage both of you as you continue to work on this particular problem, please stay safe. Thank you so much. That is the Daily Drum on this Wednesday, April 22nd. I'm Harold Fisher. Now, stay tuned for The Connection. Be safe and good night.